Hello everyone and welcome to a very special episode, and another very special episode I should say, of This Nintendo Life. This is our...
Hey, if Disney keep it up, it's not going to be very special anymore, is it?
No, there's no special thing about a Star Wars film anymore. There's four in 4 years, that's what we've had. And this is 2018, and that means that it's Solo, A Star Wars Story. And this is our spoiler cast. This is going to be all the spoilers, all the good stuff from this film. We have both seen the film. I think we got quite a lot to say on the film, actually. So we thought, why not? And, you know, Christmas has come early. This is May. And, well, now it's June. But Solo came out in May, like, to our shock that we only discovered, like, a few months ago. And now we're in a long, long wait until episode 9 coming December 2019, I think is the plan.
Is
right?
Episode 9 actually coming December 2019? Because I have a weird sneaking suspicion that it is scheduled for May as well.
Oh, really?
And I think that we may be getting on track back to the original release of when Star Wars films are supposed to come out, which is in May, which is, you know, your birthday, George Lucas's birthday.
Right.
The May the 4th, you know, May is kind of the month of Star Wars in a sense. So I don't know if that's true or not. We should probably research this, but that potentially is happening.
It seems like if it is December 2019, that's a long time for Disney to go without making a bit of money on Star Wars.
You're
films.
Right. They do, of course, have the juggernaut of the kind of Marvel Cinematic Universe. But
yes.
They like to make
actually,
lots of money.
Well, isn't May going to be Infinity War Part 2? So they wouldn't want Star Wars clashing with that.
Maybe. That could make a lot of sense. But again, it's Disney and they could do what they
Damn
want, really.
Marvel holding up our Star Wars, that's what
yeah,
I
say. Yeah. I'd say the weirdest thing about this film was me not knowing that it was coming out until maybe 2 months before it came out.
Right.
Because they just didn't get the messaging on this film anywhere like, close to what it should have been.
Normally,
you know?
these Disney films have the most, like, the build-up just goes on for months and, like, you can't avoid it by going on the internet and you just didn't feel that with this film, and like it hasn't done particularly well at the box office in comparison to Star Wars films generally, and part of that honestly feels like it's because Disney didn't promote it in the same way that they had done with something like Rogue One, for example.
Right.
Like, it's been a bit quieter, a lower key affair. And yeah, maybe they didn't want to get in the way of their Marvel films. I don't know, but it's...
Yeah, potentially. I think also just this film has had problems, right? Because it was initially going to be directed by Lord and Miller, and then they were fired, and they had to bring in Ron Howard. So for all intents and purposes, it's kind of a Frankenstein of a film from that perspective.
And they like reshot about 70%, apparently. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's mad.
So yeah, it seems like it was a bit of a mess. I think in the end it holds together okay, but you kind of, maybe you don't know that it was a mess, but also it doesn't have a huge impact. So I guess that's probably another thing to keep in mind is, you know, this film struggled.
Right.
I could see that in it to some extent.
Why don't we kick off with some first impressions?
Okay.
MBZ, what were your first impressions?
I feel like the film was kind of slow. To start, it kind of opens with a chase scene that's coolish, and you're introduced
to Kira.
A
very long chase scene.
Right, and then there's like, oh, there's a 3-year time jump, which I didn't expect that. I thought that was actually surprising to show that like there's going to be some differences when we come back to Kira, and is probably going to be doing something that we don't expect, and that ends up being true. And I like that they try to set up a lot of things, but I also found, especially in the opening, that there were a lot of references that were too on the nose and a little bit overdone overall. I think overall the references in this film are just a little too... They're not as sly or subtle as they were in The Force Awakens, you know? The Force Awakens got away with them because it had been so long and because they were small enough and cool enough that I was okay with them. Like, the biggest example I have is the chessboard when Finn, like, accidentally, like, hits it and it comes off, flickers on for 2 seconds. And then in this film, they're like, oh, remember the chessboard again? But this time it's Chewie and he's playing, and also there's Beckett, and they're going to have a game, and they're going to do the exact same animation of the Rancor creature throwing the other one to the ground. Look, it's the chessboard, yay!
There's a lot of Millennium Falcon porn in this film.
Like, basically, yeah.
So much, and maybe that wouldn't feel as strong if they had eased off on that kind of stuff in episodes 7 and 8, which they didn't at all. Like, there's tons of Millennium Falcon in both those films. So
exactly.
To then go for a third film in a 4-year period where it just focuses on the Millennium Falcon, I thought was quite... not tiresome's a strong word, but it was quite a lot to take in. My first impression, so I had quite low expectations, and
yeah,
then
same.
Following reviews and it not doing very well at the box office, as they say, my expectations were maybe even lower, and it actually was much better than my expectations. I think
sure.
I had fun throughout almost the whole film. There were some great surprises that we'll get into, and I wasn't predicting this to be... I was predicting this to be a standalone film, and it is quite clearly not one of those, which is interesting because I've now realized that apparently, like, Alden Ehrenreich...
Alden Ehrenreich.
Yeah. There we go. He's, like, signed up for, like, 3 films. So
yes.
We know that there's a lot more of him to come, and... They are enjoying
But the question
that.
Is like whether that's going to continue to be a solo trilogy, which
right.
after the performance of this, I'm not sure about. You know, will
right,
he pop
right.
up in an Obi-Wan spin-off, which
so
would be a little weird?
Apparently, it's... Maybe we're jumping ahead, but apparently it's going to be... this was the Han Solo film. The next one is an Obi-Wan-focused film, and the third one is a Boba Fett-focused film. And that's in and around...
I thought they only announced the Boba Fett film recently. That was the one they just announced, wasn't it?
I don't know out of those 3 which are confirmed and which ones aren't. I just heard that that's the trilogy that they're planning, and then obviously there's huge like need online that people want Ewan McGregor for this Obi-Wan, and I would certainly be in line with that, and we'll see whether they get him or not. But I, in the whole sort of timeline of where these films would fit in terms of release date, and we can get to that, but it's a bit confusing. But I think the film was fun, like did loads of stuff I wasn't expecting, and it was a good Star Wars film. But the more that I think about it, I realize that Star Wars films that don't focus on the Force, they have to do more. Like I really enjoyed Rogue One, but it was a very good film, like the way it was shot and the story and that sort of thing. And I think that the second you take the Force out of the equation, which is such a huge part of Star Wars, and not just Star Wars generally, but especially this trilogy they're on now, 7, 8, 9, huge emphasis on the Force, arguably more than other Star Wars films. But
I think that the stuff regarding the Force and the Jedi is more about, hey, this makes it more of a fantasy film, and we've talked about that before. It's
right,
like, these films are much more hard sci-fi as opposed to the fantasy element, which helps me get to Star Wars, you know. That's my stuff.
Yeah, I agree entirely. So my overall point is that the second you take the Force out of the equation, the film itself has to punch a lot higher than
yeah.
it would otherwise. And I think Rogue One did that more so than this film, and that's maybe...
Yeah, I agree. I think Rogue One is definitely a better film than Solo
right.
overall.
And that's maybe where this film falls a bit flat. But, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I love all the Star Wars films, and this film made it more clear to me than ever that when a Star Wars film does badly at the box office, I still really enjoy it, because
yeah.
almost any story that's told in that universe and relates to characters that I know, I'm immediately on board, and I really enjoyed it because of that. And that's something that I just don't feel the same way about with any other film series, whether it's Marvel or any of that other stuff. Like I need,
right.
I can have new characters and new worlds within this universe and still have a really great time. Even when the Force is taken out, I'll just obviously enjoy it more when the Force is there, I think.
Sure. And I think overall, a lot of this film has to be put on the shoulders of both Alden Ehrenreich, but also on Donald Glover, who plays Lando. And I don't know how you feel, but to me, Alden was not... He didn't embody Han Solo that well. I think he did an okay job, but I never really felt like, oh, this character is Han Solo. Conversely,
yeah.
the first line out of Donald Glover's mouth, I was like, that is Billy Dee Williams. Like,
Donald Glover just absolutely nailed the voice.
Like, yes, the voice is just perfect.
Like, Lando's got a very specific way that his words flow and his accent.
Yes.
And Donald Glover had definitely done something to really mimic that, far more than, I can never say this,
Alden.
Alden.
Just say Alden.
Ehrenreich. Yeah, Han Solo Jr. far more than Han Solo Jr. managed. I thought you could argue that the Lando character was basically the same character as Lando we see in episode 5, and maybe to play devil's advocate, you could argue that Alden is going for Han Solo before we know Han Solo. So
he has to develop into the character.
Sure, but I'm not trying to defend him, I'm just playing devil's advocate, and I kind of agree with you that he didn't, for most of the film, he didn't feel very much like Han Solo. And
it's a hard thing to do, right? Because Harrison Ford has such a specific way that he plays that character, and that character has so much history in terms of the years and years that people have idolized him and have, you know, wanted to see him in more films and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of expectation which you're just not going to meet, no matter how good the actor is.
And I mean, the whole, if you look at the arc of Han Solo from episode 4 to 7, he feels like he's not necessarily a good guy. He becomes more and more good and has more and more faith in the systems around him, and stuff like the Force, obviously. That's the obvious one that he has more faith in as the films go on. But at the start of episode 4, he's very reluctantly getting involved. And the theme of this film, very much so, that Kira keeps pointing out, is her thing is always, you're a good guy, I'm not a good person. And but my impression of Han Solo when you first see him in episode 4 is he's not a good guy necessarily, he's just a guy helping out. He's not he's not got this inner good that Kira kind of keeps highlighting in this film.
I'm not sure she's saying that he has inner good. I think she is more pointing out the fact that he is a good person, even though a lot of the times he may not act that way, you know. And I actually think that the way she talks about that relates very well to episode 4 because of the end where he comes back to help them on the Death Star.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that moral compass is in there somewhere. And it just, it just pings about a bunch because he wants to go and do all these smuggling things and go on adventures. But in the end, he will probably do the right thing. And I think that actually works, and it segues nicely into the older films.
Shall we talk about Kira then? Because I really avoided trailers almost entirely with this film, surprisingly.
Though because I wasn't that interested, I didn't watch trailers, you know.
I mean, less to that do was probably with the same spoiling. With me. But I regardless of how disinterested I was in the hype and the trailers, by the time I was sitting down and watching this film, I was very excited. And because it's a film in the Star Wars universe. These things don't happen often. I mean, now they do. But it's one of those things where I just knew nothing about Kira. Obviously, I knew Emilia Clarke was in the film.
Right.
I think her character really made the film in many ways. And maybe not in the way that the character was acted. I think that was fine. It was good. But it's unexpected. She's kind of, at the start, she's a very generic Han's girl kind of character. And then when you see her 3 years later, I should say that Dryden Voss's, palace, floating ship, whatever you want to call it, is so reminiscent of Jabba's flying palace, that kind of thing.
You kind of have the barge vibes in the sense of there's a kind of a party atmosphere going on and lots of schmoozing.
Yeah, it's a lot more upmarket and pristine and...
Right, Jabba's is much more hey, scum and villainy, kind of gangster-esque. And this is still gangster, but this feels like more high-class gangster.
Right. And then to see her as one of the, I guess she's a waitress or whatever.
No, she's more a socialite. I don't know. She seems to, I can't remember if they say anything about it in the film, but she has a reason that she is indebted to Dryden, right?
I don't think it's made clear, is it?
No, not really.
We know that she's got the brand of, I don't know, is that Crimson Dawn's brand, I guess?
Probably, yeah. She probably did something for them that got her involved with them, and now she owes them a debt, and that's why she is kind of bound to him, in a sense.
Right.
So I would say she's pretty high up the order, actually, even though she is indebted to him.
Yeah, I think she's arguably number two on that whole ship, but judging by the way that Dryden goes. I think... that character, Kira, is very it's very interesting the way that she's not interested in the Han 3 years later, really.
And sure,
he's totally keen on her and ready to like reignite whatever they had. And it's just not, she's always got this kind of absent face suggesting like, no, I'm not into you, I'm into more of this grand plan.
And yeah, she's basically moved on, and she clearly has a darker side to her,
right,
that comes out eventually. But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I think that she would want to go and, you know, stay with Han and Chewie and go on adventures and everything, but she realizes that there is an opportunity here. It feels like she has become more of a, I don't know, businesswoman to some extent, you know?
Yeah.
Because she sees the void and the gap that Dryden has left and the opportunity for her to rise even higher, and so she takes that and that kind of power over her relationship, which is interesting, yeah. Sure.
I really liked Dryden. Like, I thought
Paul Bettany is really good. Like, he's generally a very good actor. I don't really like him as Vision in the Marvel films. I think they could do so much more with him in that. He feels a little bit wasted on that character, but he's a really great actor, and I do like his kind of over-the-top nature in this film.
Yeah,
he feels very unhinged, and you feel like you should be afraid of him and the consequences of what will happen if they don't kind of get the coaxium or whatever.
Right. And like his blades and stuff are really cool. And like,
yeah, that's the only hint of kind of maybe lightsaber-esque technology in the film. Like, there's kind of a red glow at the end of his twin blades.
Right,
But I wonder if it has. So do you remember in the books that we read, they'd always talk about vibroblades?
Yeah.
Which I always imagined as that style of thing. Where they had a little bit of lightsaber technology in them, but weren't fully.
Yeah, I imagine those as like, you know, Grievous's guards in 3.
Sure, stuff like
similar
that.
Similar technology to Dryden's blades.
Or even the stormtrooper in episode 7 who has the kind of battering ram that Finn fights against, Like, just a piece of technology that replicates some sort of ability to reflect a lightsaber.
I mean, Dryden's blades looked almost identical to those blades in episode 8 with the Imperial Guard.
Oh, right, yeah.
Kind of
I think the Imperial Guard had, like, a larger surface area to that kind of redness around the blade, but sure, there's a similarity there. I could see that for sure.
But yeah, shall we just talk about that kind of ending then, and that like Dryden, Kira, and that other
well,
character?
I don't know. If we're on the characters, we should probably talk about some of the other characters in this film.
Let's do that first.
So the other kind of major one is Beckett. Who is played by Woody Harrelson, who I love, and he is great in everything, and I really like him.
Yeah, he's a good character.
Yeah, so he's kind of the father figure in this film for Han Solo, and he does a decent job of showing the kind of backstabbing nature, but also the I will change my mind depending on the circumstances that I think Han kind of goes through. So I think he's kind of a mirror image of a future that Han will be. Like, especially when you look at the episode 7 scene when he's stuck in the ship between the two gangs, he kind of feels like that, right? An opportunist who is willing to take the side that offers him the most benefit. And you see that at the end when he's like, sorry, Han, I betrayed you to Dryden Vos. But then he goes back on it when he realizes that actually Han has the upper hand. So very flip-floppy in that way. What do you think of Beckett overall?
Yeah, no, he's a good character. And I love the way that Beckett and his crew are introduced when Han is basically a junior Imperial trooper or whatever on, I wrote this down, on Mimbran, the planet.
Okay. They don't do the Rogue One thing of showing the name of the planet, do they?
No,
they don't. Yeah.
So, yeah, I loved that scene, and I was like, Han knows that these people aren't part of, they're not Imperial troopers, so what's going on? And then he's like, oh, I know that you're not from here, and then that's all linked, and then him and Val, and, well, she dies very quickly, which is quite shocking.
Yeah, that was rough. And she seemed like an okay, interesting character, and they're like, no, she's dead.
Yeah,
okay,
and the other, like, sort of more comedy relief kind of alien dude with them also dies, and you're like, oh geez, okay, right. So you're left
right,
with just
yes.
Beckett very quickly.
The kind of monkey with four arms, I can't remember his
name.
I I think that was quite well done, actually. Like, he gets shot, and he's like, no, I'm okay. And you're like, okay, he's probably okay. And he's like, oh, no, he's really not okay. And, and that's kind of the opportunity for Han to step into the driver's seat and be like, oh, hey, I can pilot something. I guess that's how that was set up, basically.
Yeah.
Which you could have predicted, but yeah.
So, like, I really did enjoy the relationship of that group and, like, the way that Han discovers Chewie. And like,
yes,
how they
that's probably
up.
One of my favorite parts of the film was that reveal, because up to this point I was like, okay, this film's maybe dragging a little bit, I'm just waiting for something cool to happen. And we get to this point, I'm like, oh, are they just gonna do a Rancor again? Because that's the only, hey, when you drop into a prison it's all dark and there's a monster right. coming after you, the only thing we know is a Rancor, and so far this film has been very reference heavy, so it's gonna be a Rancor. And then to see Chewie step out and him to be the quote unquote beast was a great reveal, I thought, and it got me back into the film, I think, at that point, because I was a little bit checked out.
Was totally expecting something Rancor-esque, and then I thought, oh wait, no, I can see what's coming, and then it happened. But yeah, I thought Chewie was great in the film, and like, you do get a real sense of trust between Han and Chewie very early on, and even though there's a ton of backstabbing and that sort of thing in the film, I think that works well.
Yeah, I don't know. The one thing that was weird to me is that Han speaks Wookiee for the first time we've ever heard a human speak Wookiee, I think, in a film. And I'm like, okay, I mean, I get it, but also, why have you never done that before in any other film? I don't know. It's a little bit weird. But, you know, I'll take it. I'll acknowledge that, hey, they needed a way out of that situation, and that's probably what made the most sense. So that's what they did. But, oh well. Sometimes.
Yeah, we talked about Lando briefly, but yes, he was quite a big part of the film.
It was really good. I really liked Donald Glover overall in this film.
And I really enjoyed the whole reference with the card game and like how he was cheating with the device on his arm.
Yes.
And then Han worked it out. And then by the end of the film, it's like, oh, that's how you win the Falcon. And that's referenced so much in sort of episode
right.
5 and 6, where he's saying, no, I won it fairly. He's like, no, you didn't. This is how it was. And you kind of think, how can they both be arguing they won it fairly? And then it's, oh, this is
right.
a good example where actually one of them was cheating, and then it
yes.
wasn't clear. So I thought that was a nice little reference to the other films. And that, yeah, as we said before, there were absolutely tons of references.
For sure. The Castle Run is like the big one. It's like, oh, look, he did the Castle Run.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm getting worried that there are three films, in the sense that,
yeah,
are we gonna see when Han talks about, oh, in 4, 5, 6, where he's, oh, I was on all these adventures and we did all these things, are we gonna see every single one of those adventures to the point where
I mean it seems like we're getting close to A New Hope already, right? Because their next destination is Jabba on Tatooine. You
right.
imagine that is the job that goes in a situation where Han ends up owing Jabba money. Unless
yeah.
he has a string of deals with Jabba, right? The other way it works out is that he has a string of missions he does with Jabba back and forth, and then eventually it comes to that one in episode 4 that is referenced. I don't think it's going to be that drawn out, because the current age of Alden is more similar to what Harrison Ford was when he played that character. So I don't think we actually have that long to go until we bump up against
right.
episode 4, meaning that it's probably going to be the one job. And that's going to be the next film, is the job that he does with Jabba. And then what do you do after that, right? Is there another final thing they do before it leads into episode 4? Or how do you handle it? I'm just...
Well, he has signed up for the trilogy. So I think any big Jabba situation would be done in the third film rather than the second.
Well, that doesn't make much sense, though, does it? Because like, that's the destination they're doing right now. Like, that's where they're going. So
well,
they have to...
They could spend more than one film on Tatooine, but...
They could, but I don't think that's what they're going to do. I think they want more variety than that. I think they want to have something a bit different. But I don't know. Again, this film had weird circumstances around it, and it was difficult to kind of make it something that unique.
If they do go down the Obi-Wan route on Tatooine, you could have a very brief part with Alden in the next one, but most of the film is focused on Obi-Wan and the Force.
So you're saying
and
that
Skywalker and this
basically
sort of
these other three spin-off films with Boba Fett and with Obi-Wan would feature cameos by Alden, but not him
more so
being...
than cameos, but like it won't focus on him. it'll focus on Ewan McGregor, hopefully. Like it'll,
yeah.
And it'll be...
I don't know, because the thing you're describing to me sounds more Game of Thrones-esque, where they have multiple different storylines going on.
Less Game of Thrones, more Marvel, perhaps.
Okay. Well, the problem is they can't really intersect, because they intersect at the point that we know they intersect, which is episode 4, right? Like, that's where Obi-Wan meets Han Solo. You can't have them meet beforehand. That just doesn't work.
Yeah, they don't have to meet, but they can both be on Tatooine, yeah.
Yeah, but then it becomes like, oh, here's the chance encounter. They'd pass each other by randomly. You know, I don't know. That stuff is a little...
Yeah, there will be something cheesy in there that I think a lot of people will be unhappy with. But yeah. We are where we are, and I think that...
You know, though? Star Wars is full of cheese, so it's probably the right thing to do anyway. It probably makes the most sense.
But in this conversation that we're having about, you know, characters and how it's all going to link, we need to talk about the big reveal, I guess, now.
We need to wait on this big reveal. I'm waiting on it because we still have another character to talk about, L3, the robot.
L3, good
character.
Who
I liked quite a bit. What's her name? Phoebe Waller-Bridge, I think, is the actress who plays her.
I'm not going to try and guess a double barrel name off the top of my head.
No, well, she popped up on Graham Norton because I watched with Emilia Clarke and her. They were both talking about the film on Graham Norton. And I think she does a very good job in this film of making that character feel like a droid, but also unique and different from the other droids that we've seen
fighting
in the universe.
For droids'
before.
Rights.
Right, exactly.
And getting rid of all the bolts.
What
do you call those bolts?
I don't know. But yeah, and I think actually... they do a good job of building a relationship between Lando and her, which was something I didn't really expect, but it was pretty effective in that sense. And the other thing that I think is neat is, like, she becomes a part of the ship. Like, she becomes a part of the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. People have referenced that, like, there's a few lines in episode 5, maybe, where they talk about Millennium Falcon as she, and, like, there's some sort of sentient part.
Ships are usually she, but
true,
sure.
But I didn't know that they'd hit it on the nose and then make a droid with lots of character become part of the ship necessarily.
Right. So. It basically, because I do think that they make the Millennium Falcon seem like a ship with personality. And back then, it probably meant more in the sense of, it's kind of janky in ways, and it has, like, things that are falling apart, like things that give it character, I guess. And I like the idea that she becoming part of the ship adds to that character of the Millennium Falcon overall. And even though she can't talk or anything, or she can't interact directly, I would like to think that, you know, she is cognizant as a part of that ship still, which I don't know if they'll ever draw on that again. They probably will do a stupid reference in episode 9 in the Millennium Falcon with some voice line that's like hidden behind a beep and a boop from the Millennium Falcon that's actually Phoebe Waller-Bridge's voice, like, twisted or something. I imagine they do something very subtle like that, but I don't think they'll ever kind of directly reference it again.
Shall we briefly talk about Enfys Nest?
The character that I didn't remember, who I thought was a young Mon Mothma. And then
this character's very tangential to the story, really, and kind of only comes in at the end.
Well, yeah, but it also is the setup for the rebellion, right?
Right? It's kind of exactly.
Because they start off, these characters start off as, hey, they're kind of sky pirates, you know? They're kind of scrap junkers who are looking to...
They're the renegades who attack the renegades. They're just kind of getting your way. Oh, what a pain. Yeah,
exactly.
Stealing your... what's the material called in this?
Coaxium.
Coaxium, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Unobtainium. I thought it was a nice setup to the rebellion and where this all goes. And it was an unexpected twist. One of the few unexpected twists in the film... where you're like, oh, that's a girl under that mask, and they actually are good guys, and they want to fight for all the right things in the galaxy, and that's I guess where
she looks like she's like 15 or something, actually, like very young.
Oh, really? Right. Well, I guess
I don't know how old she actually is, but to me, when she took off her mask, I'm like, oh, it's actually like not an adult at all. It's like a kid, basically.
She's the sort of character that I could imagine having quite a lot to do with Obi-Wan in a potential Obi-Wan film, where Obi-Wan is very knowledgeable in episode 4 about the rebellion and about all these things, and you think, how does he know all this stuff if he's just been on Tatooine the whole time? So there's there's things they can do, and I'm sure they've got it all planned.
I mean, Leia
out.
Knows about Obi-Wan, right? Because she sends the message. So how much does she... Has she interacted with him? Has she
this
ever
is where
interacted
we need to watch Rebels,
MZ.
That's the problem.
I know.
The problem.
There's probably a crossover there of some degree.
But yeah, I think Emphas Nest is a nice part of this film that really builds on the wider universe in this sort of trilogy that they're squashing between episodes 3 and 4. Which I like. And we can mention this when we do talk about the next character reveal, but maybe Disney are crutching too much on characters that we already know, when really ultimately the Star Wars universe is strong enough where you can tell new stories that don't link to existing characters. And I think
absolutely
there is obviously the Game of Thrones dudes who agreed on a trilogy that will hopefully be completely separate to any of this.
I mean, Rian Johnson is doing his own trilogy now as well, which also should be completely
and
separate.
I think one of those trilogies is rumored to take place very soon after episode 6, but hopefully there's the other one, the other trilogy that will hopefully just be completely different and take place far away from anything going on with the rebellion and the Empire or anything that we know about. Hopefully. I'd like to see something that doesn't crutch on, hey, here are the big names, Luke, Han, Obi-Wan. Yeah. They're your faves. Let's do more films about them, sort of thing. So they need to be careful. And we keep saying they need to be careful. They're not being careful, but they're plowing on anyway.
The thing that I would like to see the most is for them to tackle pre-prequel, to go back to the Old Republic.
It's
to
bold,
really
but I agree.
Dig.
Yeah.
In to the origin of the Sith and the Jedi in a way that is meaningful and is interesting and really shows how that stuff came about. And I think that with the branching wideness of what they're doing with Star Wars now, it is very possible that we have a set of films that are in that time period, because it's a time period that is talked about so much and yet there is so little known about it in concrete. And I would love to just know more about that even older part of the universe.
Right.
Because it's full of the Force and interesting stuff to me. So
you saw Solo before I did.
Yes.
And then when you saw it, you texted me and said, Bally, there's something in this film that you were just going to freak out about, and you will immediately text me. And
no, I just said, I know exactly the first thing you're going to text me. I know what it's going to be.
So
That's what I said to you.
I was online a lot, and I did manage to avoid spoilers, but I just saw someone say, oh my god, that cameo. And I thought, well, once you said, MZ, that there's something in this film that you were going to react to, I thought, well, it must be a cameo. So that wasn't a massive spoiler. Then this semi-spoiler online said, oh, there's a cameo. So I thought, right, there's some cameo in this that is going to get me really excited. And MBZ obviously thought that I was going to get excited about it. So I
didn't think it would get you excited. I thought you would be a little angry about it, honestly, is the first thing I thought
from our
past conversations. And I thought you
I
might
mean,
be
I do
a
have mixed feelings
annoyed.
About it. I'm not necessarily angry. But my prediction was that there would be an Obi-Wan cameo. And potentially even with Ewan McGregor. Not even with Ewan McGregor, but maybe a cloaked hood from behind or something that was quite
that would be cool.
That would have been cool. And they do enjoy hitting the reveals a bit on the nose sometimes in these films.
A little, and
that was the same with Rogue One, where you could have definitely just had the back of Leia's head. But anyway,
yes, you didn't need to CGI a full Carrie Fisher, but
sure. The point was, I was looking out for this cameo, and then when Emphas Nest and her crew come back at the end, and then there's a shorter part member of her crew, and it's Warwick Davis. I'm like, oh my god, that is a cool cameo. But then I thought, it's cool, but it can't surely be to the level that MBZ was suggesting I was going to have a meltdown over. Like, Warwick Davis is in loads of Star Wars films. Surely this isn't it. So I was
also,
kind of...
I don't think it's really a secret, because Warwick Davis has been tweeting forever about being in the film anyway.
Okay,
so, you know,
fair enough. Yeah. So I was like, well, it can't be him. There must be something else. So obviously you have the end scene where Kira kills Dryden.
Yeah.
And she becomes the leader, I guess, of Crimson Dawn, or at least that that part of it.
Yeah.
And then she speaks to like a cloaked figure, and I'm like, who is this cloaked figure? The second you see a cloaked figure, first of all, you think the Emperor.
I really thought it was Sidious, first of all. I was like, oh, it's Sidious. That's a neat, I guess.
But the idea that Sidious would be tied into sort of the underground syndicates and all that's quite an interesting idea. But before in the film, when it's mentioned, like, there's a higher up to Dryden, I immediately thought Jabba the Hutt. Like, we're in, okay, this is gangster syndicate territory, smugglers, yeah, and all this stuff. It has to be Jabba the Hutt. Like,
sure.
And if not Jabba, then maybe Boba Fett, maybe. Okay. There was no way in hell that I thought this cloaked figure was going to be Darth Maul. Or
Darth fucking or Maul, Maul, son,
as they call him now.
He's back with a vengeance.
My God. So, obviously, like, we don't watch, but we're in touch, perhaps, with Rebels and the cartoon series and Clone Wars.
I know when weird stuff happens in that show, basically.
Right, and I've caught up on... There's a few videos on YouTube that sort of outline Maul's story from episode 1 to Rebels, I guess. And it's not a good story in the sense that, like, dead characters shouldn't come back from the dead, and this is all... And but apparently his hatred of Obi-Wan and the Force drove him back to existence, and then he gets...
So I actually went on YouTube and watched that scene of his brother, whose name I forget now, the right, yellow Darth Maul guy. I wish I could remember his name, but I can't. Goes down into this... It's basically like a garbage planet where all the universe's waste is just deposited there. So basically, because he fell down essentially what was a garbage chute in Coruscant, or in Naboo, sorry, it was kind of all that stuff was taken and shipped onto, you know, a garbage disposal ship and then dumped on Letho Minor, I think it's called. And he basically survives through his hatred of Obi-Wan or whatever. Yeah. And he's like, just whatever nonsense, like a half-bodied Darth Maul can survive, apparently. You know, we don't know anything about the Zabrak, like potentially, well, there probably is a lot known about them, but I personally don't know that much. Potentially their DNA and the way their, you know, bodies work and everything is completely different. And it is potentially feasible that half a body Darth Maul could survive. And then he, like, finds his fucking spider legs and he, yeah, just, like, is a weird spider monster. And I'm, yeah, like, this is very strange and weirdly dark for a show that's aimed at kids like this. It's,
yeah, yeah,
it's kind of out there. But yes, I did know that Darth Maul had come back. And you and I had constant conversations about, God, I hope they don't canonize that properly. Like, even though it is actually canon because of the fact that, yeah, Rebels and Clone Wars count,
was done before the Disney takeover.
Yes, it was.
And then in the big EU expulsion that Disney did, they kept Clone Wars. And, yes, like, and then they introduced their own show, Rebels. And then a lot of the characters from Clone Wars go into Rebels, including... Maul.
Yes, and the thing the reason that they kept the Clone Wars around is because they wanted the Ahsoka link there, because she turns up in Rebels, and, you know, she's a character that can link to the previous universe.
I mean, she could appear in this trilogy.
She could. Yeah. I actually think that would be fucking cool if she was in one of these films.
Yeah,
that would be really awesome.
So the weird part is that they almost tell the entire Maul arc in Rebels and Clone Wars, to the point where Maul confront... I don't know if you know all this bit, MBZ.
I saw that clip as well where Maul basically... Spoilers for Rebels,
yeah,
by
I know,
the way, in case anyone gives a shit, but, like, whatever.
But Maul confronts Obi-Wan on Tatooine,
yeah, and then
Obi-Wan
just
kills
him.
Yeah. So it's... I don't know what they're going to do with this character Maul, whether he just has an interaction with Obi-Wan or whether... he fades away quite quickly and they focus on other characters, and he might have just been a smaller cameo than perhaps we're anticipating. But, or if they just want to completely sack off Rebels and say, no, we're gonna show you fighting Obi-Wan again on Tatooine, and we're gonna have an outcome to that. Or they could even replicate that scene, but in, you know, non-animated form. Who knows? I think,
yeah, I don't know,
there are options, but I was shocked, but I am now pleasantly surprised by it, because we've talked about this before in our spoiler cast to do with Star Wars, but there is a slow and deliberate, I would argue, march that is normalizing the prequel trilogy. And
sure,
I definitely appreciate that, because I think it's becoming more and more unavoidable that these films are tying closer and closer to the prequels. And that was always going to happen when you're going to do lots of storytelling between episode 3 and 4. Absolutely, because so much happens in three that is important to the whole of the Star Wars universe.
Exactly.
You can't just pretend it didn't happen. And from that point of view, I think it is exciting that this character is here. And the fact that like his whole build up is this hatred of Obi-Wan, and that surely Obi-Wan has to come back in if he's featured more in this trilogy, like it's going to happen. And I will obviously be devastated if it's not Ewan McGregor, but we shall see what happens. But I think it's exciting. And what I am concerned about, and this was the response of Caroline, and I listened to some others online saying that more casual Star Wars fans perhaps thought the same, was that the second they saw Darth Maul, they thought that the film took place before Episode One, and it's like, that logic is absolutely perfect. But
yes, totally. But, because why would a guy who got chopped in half suddenly just be there again?
So you're having to justify, like, oh no, he survived. And it's like, no, he didn't. I saw it. Like, he's like, no, he survived. And then you're scrabbling around with Clone Wars and Rebels.
To me, it feels like a Marvel post-credit sequence that was put in before the credits. In the sense that all the hardcore Marvel fans will know what this minute reference in the post-credit sequence means. Whereas the majority of people will be like, okay, that's a thing. And I do believe that they put that in more as a nod to people who have followed Star Wars and know what's going on currently in the universe.
And it is the deepest dive on a non-film related thing in a Star Wars film by such a long way.
To some degree, because Forrest Whitaker played the character who was also in Rebels or the Clone Wars. I can't remember what his name is, right? But like, Forrest Whitaker played that character who was in the TV show. So that was also a direct link, but I think this one is more significant because it's fucking Sith, you know. Darth Maul.
It's a character most people think is dead, and then he's just there, and it was unexpected, and it made me like, I woke up the next day after watching this film thinking, did that just happen? Did that seriously just happen? It's funny because you see him and he's got the horns, and apparently it is Ray Park, which is awesome. I think that's great.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, that's motherfucking Ray Park. He looks exactly the same. Ray Park. And the voice is actually being done by what's his face, who's the main character in Days Gone, and also Sam Witwer, I think is his name. He plays Darth Maul in Rebels, and also he's the main character in Days Gone. And he's a voice actor and actor in general. So he's doing the voice of Darth Maul. Ray Park is not. Because someone else did the voice of Darth Maul in Episode 1 as well, who wasn't Ray Park, basically.
But it was the decision that the hood would reveal the horns. And then it's like, okay, do people know who this character is? And it's like, maybe not. We better throw in something else that'll definitely jog their memory. What shall we do? Let's stick in the double bladed lightsaber.
Yes, it is the most iconic part of Darth Maul, from his facial features.
Maybe they didn't need to put in the double bladed lightsaber, but it certainly gave it a sense.
For the casual fans, that's why it was there. It's for people who were like, I kind of recognize that, but I don't know who that is actually. And then they see the double bladed lightsaber, like, okay, I know who that is now.
Right. You know, kind of thing. I mean, every Star Wars film's got to have a lightsaber at some point. It's the other.
Sure.
Part, so you just got to.
Has there been one without a lightsaber? Did Rogue One have any lightsabers in it?
Yeah, Darth Vader in this.
Yes, of course.
For a long time, I obviously didn't know about that Darth Vader cameo, and when that happened, I was very much like, wow, that was something.
It's pretty fucking cool, yeah.
So, yeah, I think this is an incredible plot decision to go down. Maybe for not all the right reasons, but I'm absolutely hooked now.
Look,
where does this plot go next? I am massively excited about the next film, and I didn't think I'd be saying that because they are playing with some big characters in the Star Wars universe that I didn't think they were gonna ever go near with this spin-off film, you might say.
To be frank, it's dumb, right? Darth Maul shouldn't be alive.
Star Wars, I think, is dumb.
Honestly, yeah, Star Wars is dumb, obviously, but also, like, I think it is exceedingly stupid that Darth Maul survived on rage and hate of Obi-Wan and got spider legs and suddenly is back because they needed to put a recognizable face in the Clone Wars and blah, 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 blah. and the fact that it is now canon, like fully canon, is also incredibly dumb. That said, I don't care because we get to see more Darth Maul in films. Right. And quite honestly, that's more exciting to me than any of the like nonsense that made it happen being annoying or frustrating.
It is hinted at a lot with, this is a really bad justification of all this, but here we go.
Okay.
So it's hinted a lot by Palpatine in 3, and that there is a theme amongst the Sith of this kind of, the Sith are so powerful with the Force that life and death become meaningless kind of idea. I'm not saying that's a good justification of Maul back from the dead, but
sure,
there is this idea that the Sith are so strong with the dark side of the Force that they can do all sorts of crazy stuff.
So basically, he used the Force. The idea that he used the Force to keep himself alive is far more viable to me than any other suggestion, I guess.
Yeah, and
that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, and it'll be interesting if they do try and tell that story in the next film or whenever you see him next. And I think they owe that to us, to be honest. I don't think
I don't know. They kind of did that in the Rebels, didn't they? Is that not what they do? Because I haven't seen that, so I can't
sure
speak,
but
to
I'd
at all.
Like to think that you can watch the films without watching Rebels and still get a justification of characters and their whereabouts to some degree, even if you are duplicating slightly, you know. Yeah. What I mean? So like I think that they at least owe the cinema audience something to justify why he is back and how he is back, perhaps.
What do you think that phone call was like to Ray Park? Do you think he expected to 20 years later be playing Darth Maul again in a big Star Wars film? Like, how do you think he felt? Like, he's like, wait, what? Really? Like, you want me again to play Darth Maul, like, that guy who got chopped in half?
Of all the films, you want me, and you want me in the Solo spin-off. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So I think every single character who's ever been in Star Wars probably their interest was peaked when Disney took over, but I don't think that I don't think Darth Maul coming back for the Solo spin-off was ever on the cards, to be honest.
No, like, if you were to give me a list of, like, 20 characters to choose who would cameo in Solo, I would not have picked Darth Maul on that list, you know?
Yeah, I was convinced, like, it's Jabba, it's Boba, it's even Obi-Wan, and that would be incredible if it was Obi-Wan. But Darth Maul, you have got to be joking. Like, this is... And, like, Darth Maul is arguably the character of our childhood. Maybe
yes,
alongside Qui-Gon Jinn, perhaps. Like, he's...
Like, as an iconic action villain, like, there is no one who surpasses Darth Maul.
Exactly.
He is not really a character, but he's also fucking cool as shit, you know? He's just, like, the embodiment of...
Yeah, exactly. So if you want to take a character who defines the prequel trilogy, so it has to be a character that's in the prequels but not the other films. You're looking at Qui-Gon, looking at Darth Maul, Padme, I guess. Like, those characters, to see them in a Star Wars film in 2018 is just... It's like saying to us, like, we appreciate your generation got into Star Wars. Well, I know we got in slightly before the prequel trilogy, but that was our trilogy, was the prequels to some degree. To give us that kind of rope back into the Star Wars universe at this stage is so bizarre and great. And I guess think of how much Rebels downloads will have skyrocketed in the last few weeks because of this.
Probably
reveal. So yes. Maybe it's just a really...
I think the YouTube views on those Darth Maul like episodes will have gone up dramatically because
right.
of this.
And maybe you can start, like, hypothesizing that, I mean, if they've done this with Darth Maul, who knows where Snoke could end up in the next film or that. So maybe it does open an unhealthy can of worms, but...
Sure.
I just think it's a cool reveal. I really like the fact Maul's here. I think Kira linked to Maul in that sense. And did you think she was trained in the ways of the Force at all, in the way that she was fighting? Or am I reading into things too much?
No, I think she was just like a ninja. So here's another great reference that the film makes that is the deepest fucking cut possible. So there's a really bad PS1 Star Wars game. It's a fighting game, and it's called Masters of Teras Kasi. And in one of the scenes, Kira, when she's explaining to me, I think it's Han, how she fights, she says, something along the lines of, yeah, like, she's trained Taras Kasi. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? You actually put that in the film? That's amazing. So, yes, there's that is one of the references I was like, okay, I like this reference. That's a good reference because it is just so fucking niche. That was good. So, yeah, she's just a ninja. She trained in Taras Kasi Bali, obviously, clearly.
So, yeah, I'm excited where her and Maul go next. And Han, like, his character is good. And I want to see what happens with, like, Enfys Nest and all that stuff. And this is, like, generally, I just thought this was going to be a standalone film. Would have great references, great action scenes. And it did. But it's opened up this can of worms. I just wasn't expecting it to open up that I really... The more I think about it, I really enjoy. And a lot of people have said they're just turning Star Wars like into the next MCU, where they're doing all these films that link up, and you got to watch this hub film in order to watch this other film. And they're definitely going that way, but I kind of like it. And I didn't think I'd be saying that in a
really
weird
way. If they pull off an Infinity War with Star Wars, then as someone who is so checked out on the MCU and yet loved Infinity War, I can't even imagine what that would be like for me with Star Wars, because I love Star Wars. So that, yeah, that's
I mean,
that's
I think the third film in this trilogy is going to have Jabba, Obi-Wan, Darth Maul, Han Solo, and Boba Fett. And, like, I don't think that was ever on the cards, really. And it's definitely where they're going. So, and I like it, I think. I think
we'll see.
Yeah. Like, and like I said, it's hard for me to not enjoy a film in the Star Wars universe. Like, I really did enjoy this film. And it's probably still, like, my least favorite Star Wars film of the 10, I think, we're at now. But
same.
It's still a great film. Like, it's still good, and I'm happier about the situation of the universe more so at the end of this film than I was at the start. And I think that it's a lot of credit to some of the stories that film opens up.
Yeah, it was a lot better than I thought it would be. It had some neat links, some things that could be set up for later that will eventually pay off. And yeah, maybe on its own, it's not amazing, but I think it's a good setup film for a lot of what they could do in the intervening kind of years and stuff like that. So yeah, any little bits that you wanted to pick up on?
I thought it was
cool that we saw Corellia again.
Corellia.
Or for the first time, I should say, to see what kind of planet it is. And also to show just like how much influence the Empire has, and basically airport check-ins that they have that are securely locked down in order for people to emigrate
really
in and out.
It felt like the universe was almost, in large parts, a barren wasteland where people were scared of the Empire, but the Empire certainly didn't have control over the entirety of huge planets. And obviously gangsters were, a lot of gangsters and sort of underground types in this film that were just doing all sorts of things, and showing that the Empire really aren't in full control of the galaxy. And
right, and they have that moment where they are invading on that planet, what's called Mimbran, where there was a line about, like, Ohan's like, hey, we're the bad guys, like, we're the Empire, we're the ones taking over this peaceful civilization.
What do you think about the Empire using the Imperial March as their own propaganda tune?
I didn't even pick that up. No,
so that's I've a, heard a few people talking about this online, and it's like, that was weird. And I actually liked it, where that's like the, and I'm pretty sure Rebels uses that song in propaganda, like radio music as well, where it's just sort of like the Imperial March here echoing out across the universe.
I like that idea generally. I like the idea that you take something that's iconic like that and make it a part of the actual universe. I think that works, and it sets the tone. It sets like the idea of, because that piece of music, and this is true of so many pieces of music in Star Wars, is so emblematic of the feel and the threat and the danger of the Empire. Like, it just, it's ominous in a way that is very effective. So
what do you think about the damn dice appearing in every other shot in this
fuck
film?
Those dice, seriously, what the fuck is the point of those? Like, I was watching the Kind of Funny reacts, and Nick Scarpino was like, Who the fuck cares about these dice? Like, these dice? No one knew what these fucking dice were. Where were these dice ever? So apparently, why is everyone freaking out about these dice?
In the original trilogy, they're in the Millennium Falcon somewhere, but no one's really paid much attention.
No, they're just a thing that they just made into a thing that has no real symbolism of any... doesn't make any sense.
Are they just to sell some dice?
They're just to sell some fucking dice, but also it's... as they said in the Kind of Funny video, is like, it's to pay off a thing that's already happened in another film that came out last year, you know? Like, it's like those dice are retroactively having meaning ascribed to them because Luke, like, places them into Leia's hands at the end of that film, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. They're weird. I don't know why they've been made such a big deal of, but...
There's always some weird decisions in there.
Yeah, potentially.
Any final thoughts?
I mean, we saw the castle run, which was basically just an escape sequence with a giant tentacle monster. You know, the castle run has always been one of those things where it's like, it's not to do with time, it's to do with distance, because a parsec is not a measurement of time, it's a measurement right. of distance. And so the idea that he did it in 12 parsecs is because he basically took a shortcut through the cloud place instead of going the direct route,
and
which
escaped,
is why...
escaped Cthulhu.
Escape the Cthulhu, yes, the giant tentacle monster, which, can we stop putting giant tentacle monsters in Star Wars, for God's sake? It's like the least Star Wars thing possible, and it really bugs me. But, I don't know, I guess they like them, so they keep putting them in. It's fine.
Yeah. No, it was a fine part, and yeah, there was a lot of action scenes that just, I thought, went on a little bit too long, but I think
yeah, the train one, the train sequence definitely was, like, dragging a little bit too much. Yeah. I really like the visual design of that train.
Yeah,
it reminded
me
of a Disney
yeah.
ride, you know? Like, definitely a cool idea that the track is kind of curving and the train, like, bends and shifts around the kind of area. That was very neat. And yeah, overall, yeah, I was happy with it, I think. More impressed than I expected, but again, not so impressed that I thought it was amazing. It was a good film. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I guess thank you very much for joining us in this another spoiler cast on a Star Wars film, this time Solo, A Star Wars Story. Awful name. And I guess we will join
you. Before we close, we do need to mention that they did give Han Solo his name in this film, because as he checks out, the guy is like, "What's your name?" He's just like, "Han." He's like, let's think about this. In a sequence which I think is way too protracted of him like being like, let's think. How can I work this out? I know you're not traveling with someone. You're alone. So we'll call you Han Solo. How
they
about
could just
that?
Say you're
Look
not traveling with someone. You're traveling. And then yeah. cut, but they have to yeah. just say Solo, and you're like, oh
yes,
my god,
they have to spell it out in like painstaking detail that is just kind of awful. So yeah,
that
was bad.
Quite a few jokes in this film that I don't think landed, which was a shame, because normally I think that Star Wars is generally quite a funny film, and especially the new
yeah.
trilogy, I think they've got the comedy down quite well in those films. There's a few
they're leading into
that
it for sure
aren't good, but yeah. Well, I guess we don't know when the next Star Wars film is.
So I just looked it up, and it is, you are right, it is
December
next year, so that is a long wait for the next
Disney
Star Wars
you will have to go almost a year and a half without filling your pockets full of Star Wars gold.
Yes,
so I presume in that space there will be three seasons of Rebels and
uh-huh.
all sorts to make some money off. But and yeah, I guess Infinity War Part 2 is a big factor maybe in why.
That's probably why it's not made.
Yeah. So thank you very much for joining us. And we will be back in the future with more spoiler casts on Star Wars, because we love doing these. And I think
yes.
I guess Disney love making Star Wars films. So I guess we're going to do one of these every year until
uh-huh.
the end of time. So
yep.
yeah.
It's our lives.
Until next time, may the Force be with you.